Hello.
Hi, Ken. It's Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
And hi, Ken. This is Laura Devine.
Well, you're both sounding very clear. Hi, Laura. Great to hear from you.
Great. Thank you.
So we have a good connection, and we might as well jump right in.
Sure.
Okay.
We're here to discuss integral coaching. And the word integral, as usually for us, means AQUAL, A-Q-A-L, all quadrant, all level, all lines, all states, all types. And your program, although we've seen several consulting and coaching programs developed using the AQUAL framework, and we appreciate all of them, we found your program to be definitely the most complete and the most comprehensive in a really profound way. And so we are, in fact, Integral Life is partnering with both of you from your Integral Life Canada organization to offer Integral Life programs through our Integral Institute, Integral Life organization itself. And we're very excited about this. We have a first cohort of coaches just about completed your program, and they're all raving about it. And we'll soon be passing on the good news and the good awareness, the good consciousness, and the good life to those who come and study with them. So I thought what we could just do is really just kind of a nuts and bolts walk through this one thing at a time. The AQUAL framework has 5 or 6 main elements, the quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types that I mentioned, and each of those are addressed in a quite significant way in the integral coaching model. And so let's just go through those 5 elements. And first, actually, why don't you tell us a little bit about each of you, where you came from, a little bit about your background, how you formed integral coaching, and bring us up to date.
We're really old, Ken. This could take a while.
I was born in
a small town in northern Canada.
There we go.
The sun doesn't shine.
There we go.
Well, actually, we both have similar and different careers. What's similar is that we both started our careers in corporate life. So
yeah.
Laura is originally from California, Northern California, she likes to point out, and I'm from Ottawa, Canada. And both of our careers started out in very different ways than we had anticipated, but one of the things that we each found in our corporate histories is that we were always asking the developmental questions. We were always trying to dig underneath, how is it that people learn, how is it that they see, and what are ways to bring about change that are actually sustainable?
Right.
So this has always been a question. We both had Laura in swimming and me in soccer, coached a lot. We were both athletes through, you know, our younger years. And this was just like a commonality. So we actually met as neighbors, which people find usually surprising, is that when Laura moved to Canada, she actually moved into a house 4 doors away from where I was living. And the strangest thing was that when we started talking to each other, it was as though we had met like alter selves.
Yeah.
And when we each saw each other's offices as well, we all had the same books on our shelves, you know, Wilbur books. We are both Zen practitioners, you know, so all the self-help and self-development, you know,
right,
books that come online. And so it was just like, who are you and how did we meet? And at that time, Laura was starting to do coaching here in Ottawa, and she had been bringing her own thoughts around coaching into the company where she worked. And similarly, I was still working for a company here in Ottawa and was bringing in coaching to the best of my ability there. And so when we met each other, you know, Laura actually said, you should leave NorCal and we should start a business together. And 6 months later, we did. And so that's ultimately how we came to meet. We both had been longtime students of yours without ever having met you.
Right.
And so that was a main focus for us, was really looking at you know, what we've learned about development and the various kind of iterations of our own understanding of development even before we launched an Integral Coach Training School.
Sure.
Was really understanding kind of the various cycles we had each gone through in trying to understand development, and a lot of sources from you were key for that.
Right.
Yeah, so if I was just to add in a few other notes to what Joanne said, a couple things about our past is that we both were interested in trying to figure out how to apply whatever we learned. So
right.
Neither of us are the type that just are enamored in the learning itself. We
yeah.
also try and figure out what are we going to do with that, and how does that explain what we've been experiencing. We both tend to have understanding emerge, and then sources like yours and others sometimes are confirming for us, and other times are, you know, blowing our minds with a new idea. So
right.
it's a bit of both. And for both of us, I remember for me, I think the first book I read of yours was No Boundary.
Right.
And it was a huge awakening for me to really understand the notion of there is no boundary.
Right.
And I just found your writing just spoke to me profoundly. And so that just set me off in studying transformation of consciousness, the Atman Project, and all the works of that era that you wrote that just helped explain development
right.
and consciousness development. And that just allowed me to go, oh, okay.
Right.
Gave me a place to put things
right.
That I somehow knew or sort of knew, but didn't have a way to put it together.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways for both of us is that your work, that, and then, of course, SES, and, you know, that really kind of blew everybody's mind, including mine. So I'm just really starting to grasp, oh, there are these perspectives. And so every iteration that, you know, I gained and Joanne gained from your work helped us better understand how powerful maps are.
Right.
And I think that inspired us both in content but also in service.
Right.
That contributed to our approach to work.
Right.
So so you've been around us for quite a while.
And, of course, putting the, you know, merely, quote-unquote, written material and converting that from an intellectual understanding to a whole-bodied, whole mind-body understanding and awareness is the point of the teaching itself, is the point of the work itself. And practice is always emphasized in my work. But there is a theoretical component, because all practice is guided by some map of reality. All practice is guided by some idea, some framework about what reality is or isn't, how it fits together, and so on. And so what we found out is that the more comprehensive the map or the framework, the more comprehensive the practice, the fuller the practice, the greater, deeper, wider the realization that comes from practicing when you consciously work with a map that is as full and as complete as possible. And that's, of course, what the integral approach attempts to do. And it doesn't give a fixed map that says, in a sense, you have to think this way. What it says is, in your approaching reality or any problem or any situation or in your own life questions, make sure that whatever you do include, you at least include these five elements, because these are elements that we find in all cultures, and these are elements that we find are present in all of the great maps of the world and worldviews, and they are ones that, if you want to have a comprehensive view, be sure and include them. And so some people think that it's kind of a forced, rigid, fascist type of thought system. And really just the opposite. It actually frees your mind to consider these other dimensions. And then you realize that actually your mind had been stuck and frozen in a region just because you didn't know it was there, because you weren't aware of its existence. And so you didn't know how to work with it or be aware of it or even talk about it. And so that's what happens when people learn the Aqua Map. They're really learning five factors about the territory of their own being, about the territory of their own awareness. And it usually comes with a great deal of kind of aha or oh or wow and just the opposite feeling of openness and release and liberation.
That's exactly right.
One other thing that I wanted to add, Ken, is that I do find, even with myself and my own continued development, is that when there is that experience of stuckness, there is a bit of resistance that goes
right.
on as I'm being exposed to something that's expanding me. And that is when, you know, in our training, for example, with the students, they do bump into that as they're starting to be asked to connect and see and perceive and comprehend in perspectives and dimensions that aren't part of their kind of familiar zone.
Right.
And so there is that, you know, tension in that moment. But once you move through that, it's quite something.
And that's where the openness and the transparency and the release occurs. And so it's terrific that your integral coaching essentially works with that and works with pointing out these dimensions, because the dimensions are there. These aspects of your awareness and your life are present in all people anyway. And so if you're not aware of them, you're simply blindsided by them. They're operating. You don't know it. You keep bumping into walls and can't figure out why until you get a little bit better, more comprehensive picture of yourself, what you're doing in the world, what your goals, desires are, and so on. Right. That's what the integral map does. And so then it's a matter of, indeed, working it out. And that's where integral coaching becomes so beneficial.
Absolutely.
So looking at these five or six major elements, the quadrants, the order that we've listed them is just completely arbitrary. Quadrants means essentially the perspectives, the dimensions that every person has on the moment, including first, second, and third person perspectives, which are essentially the three or four quadrants. And then levels are the developmental stages that multiple intelligences go through in each individual. And so the multiple intelligences themselves are the lines, the developmental lines, and they move through levels of consciousness or levels of complexity, levels of development. And so those are the quadrants, levels, and lines, and each of the four quadrants has levels and lines in it. And then there are states of consciousness that go along with lines or structures of consciousness, and these are typical things like waking, dreaming, deep sleep, but there are also things like meditative states and everyday states of joy and happiness and depression, despair, and so on. And then types. And types can use any typology that has some sort of evidence for it. Gender types and Enneagram and Myers-Briggs are three of the most popular that are used. And so we just want to go through those and point out what they are and point out the unique way that integral coaching has made use of this framework and its elements. And so we can start with the quadrant lenses. And what the quadrants assert is simply that any occasion has an inside and an outside, an interior and an exterior, and as well as existing in an individual form, and it's part of some collective. So there's the inside and the outside of the singular and the plural. And these often have pronouns attached to them, although the pronouns don't exhaust the territory of these quadrants. But the interior of the individual, when I look within myself and introspect and am aware, I use the pronoun I. And variations on first person, singular. And so I or me or my and mine. And so the pronoun I is a standard representative of the first quadrant. And then there's what happens when you and I interact to form a we. And the you is a second person and a second person perspective, and taken together with I forms first-person plural, we. And so we often use we and or you to represent the second-person collective interior of any group. And any group has a set of values and a set of needs, a set of drives, a set of perceptions, in a sense. And so that's the second quadrant. The third quadrant is the exterior of an individual. And exterior means you take an objective, scientific type of view of the individual being. And so typically that results in a scientific view of the organism. So whereas in the upper left quadrant, or I, we might find things like desires, values, motivations, needs, fears, hopes, dreams. In the upper right quadrant, or it, we find things like a triune brain, neurosynapses, two lungs, two kidneys, one heart, etc., all described in third person, objective terms, of which it is a primary, typical pronoun. And then in the lower right quadrant, we have the plural of it. So we have its, and these are systems and infrastructures and institutionalized forms that represent the exterior, essentially material, physical form of collectives. And that can be anything from the simple shape and arrangement of a family structure, living in a hut or a house or a building, to very large techno-economic modes of production, horticultural to agrarian to industrial, informational, and so on. So these four quadrants are I, we, it, and its, are present with every occasion, and it's really important to be aware of all four of them whenever you're approaching a particular situation. And what we find, on the contrary, in most academic studies, is that one of the four quadrants is privileged and is taken to be the only real quadrant. So in consciousness studies, for example, there are two major schools, and one of them represents the scientific materialist view that only the upper right quadrant is real. Only exterior it items are real. So only neurosynapses and electronic brain patterns and all the other exterior objective descriptions of the brain and the human organism, those are the only realities, and consciousness is a product of those realities. Whereas the other major school believes just the opposite, that it's the first person consciousness that is the primary reality. So pure I-ness, pure awareness, pure unqualified consciousness is the only reality, and everything else, including all the its and we's and objects, are simple manifestations of this pure I-ness, pure awareness. And there's just a constant argument. You can open the Journal of Consciousness Studies and find nothing but disagreement and continuing bickering between these two schools. And what becomes obvious when you use a four-quadrant model is that neither one of them could arise without the other. Neither one of them makes sense without the other. Neither one of them can even be described without describing the other. And that's because they always go together. There is a moment-to-moment phenomena, and if you look at it from the interior, from an I position, then you get the upper left quadrant. You get the interior feeling and desires and motivations and how you feel those. And if you look at that same phenomena from an outside, exterior, objective view, then you'll see the triune brain and all of the neural synapses and neural patterns and neural connections that are the exterior versions of this moment-to-moment phenomena. So automatically, there's an enormous amount of bickering that is simply ended when we see that both of these, I and it, are necessary ingredients to understand any situation. And that certainly includes human consciousness and realities associated with that. And what we find is that these four quadrants, that individuals, much like the human disciplines, tend to pick one or two quadrants and privilege those because they've either learned that the particular quadrant is the most important, or they picked up the idea themselves, or they have talents that lie in one of the quadrants and then they belittle or downgrade or sometimes aren't even aware of the other two or three quadrants. And so the first thing that an integral coach wants to do, and by first I don't necessarily mean in a strict order, but one of the first things that an integral coach wants to do is determine what the client's quadrant orientation is, because that will determine whether this client responds to I language, and primarily language about interiors, or whether it responds to it language, or whether it responds to we language, or whether it responds to its language. So determining the quadrant lens that the client approaches the world and approaches problems that they are bringing to the coach is one of the first things that integral coaching does, yes?
Absolutely, it's one of the first things, and I think even just as beautifully is it gave us access to looking at the coaching industry in general and uncovering many of the reasons why so many of the approaches that exist in the coaching industry are partial.
Right.
Because coaching schools themselves, without even realizing that they're doing it, have a particular way that they believe that change occurs,
right,
and that will privilege one quadrant if you believe change occurs,
right,
on the basis of just allowing somebody to connect their deep inner wisdom in the upper left, then, you know, the coach's interactions with the client, the coach doesn't bring any of their perspectives forward because that's interfering with the unique eye of that particular client,
right,
arising, and similarly around the quadrants. And similar arguments to what you described, you know, in the study of consciousness, there's been those same arguments in the study or the looking at the coaching industry around how does change actually occur. And this actually gave Laura and I great access into understanding why so many approaches out there are partial. And you can just see it in the way that the coach interacts with the client.
Right.
So just from a coaching industry snapshot, it's even, you know, powerful for us on that alone. But then when you take the coach and you think about the coach interacting now with the client, definitely the coach is looking for the privileged quadrant because that then is going to be the lens through which the client engages with their particular coaching topic.
Right.
But I would say a couple things. One is that, as you know, Ken, in knowing our work, that a couple of ways that we use the lenses is both looking as the client and looking at the client.
Right.
And so we can look at the client and see that they have an orientation, say, from the upper left, and that is therefore going to color how they interact with the other, you know, three perspectives that are always available to them from the other quadrants.
Right.
But just because they orient from a particular quadrant or have a looking, if we look as them or look from their view, if we now look at them, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because you orient from the upper left that you are competent in the upper left.
Correct.
And so the being able to split off orienting quadrants as the looking through that they have from what are the capacities and competencies that they're bringing to the table,
right,
in that quadrant and the other quadrants is very, very useful to our integral coaches in being able to separate out various uses of the quadrants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been hugely supportive of clients then knowing not only the capacities to build in clients, but also knowing the language that they need to use in talking to a client such that they touch on the particular orienting quadrant of the client, similar to,
right,
how we use levels, you know, where you'd want the language to be meeting the client where they are,
right,
or slightly above. So the way of using orienting quadrants also really informs coaches in their languaging of opportunities and practices and distinctions for clients. So all of that is extremely powerful for an integral coach.
And so what are some of the ways that this might come up in practice, and what are some of the suggestions that you might end up making to a client who is privileging a particular quadrant?
There's a couple ways that would play out, Ken. One is that what we haven't talked about yet is our part of our method works with a client becoming aware of their current way of relating to their coaching topic and,
right,
and talking with them about coming up with some kind of symbol or metaphor that really depicts that way so that,
right,
they can start getting access to that, as well as offering them some new way that they could relate to their topic that opens up their perspectives, opens,
right,
up possibilities. So in one way that just using this one lens contributes to that is that their current way of relating to their topic, one of the facets that contributes to that is the quadrant that they orient from.
Right.
And so the metaphor or symbol or language or phrase or whatever the coach and client come up with that depicts that is going to have a flavor of that quadrant they orient from.
Right.
And then the new way that's offered to them is going to have a flavor of one of the other quadrants or many of the other quadrants.
Right.
It's going to open them up just as they access that. So that's one way that we work with it.
Right.
The other would be in some kind of practice that we would design, we would be looking at what are the particular quadrants that they need development in, and we would create a practice that's specifically developing capabilities in that quadrant. Let's
right.
say capabilities in being able to, you know, make powerful requests or something like that and negotiating
right.
with other people.
Right.
And we would take into consideration in the crafting of that practice the fact that they orient from the upper left, let's say. So there's got to be some bridge in that design that allows that person who orients from the upper left to go, oh, I'm going to value doing this. This is going
right.
to be meaningful to me.
Right.
So there has to be enough I-ness in the design for the client to be interested.
Right.
So it has to be, that's that meeting them where they are. Otherwise, it's like, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
And yet at the same time, it's expanding them to start in the design of the practice. It'd be calling for them to be paying attention to not only their own need and request, but paying attention to the other person they're interacting with and starting to pick up what's the value and needs of the other person and
right.
what's the shared field feel like and what's actually happening here.
Right.
So that practice would start to cultivate those capacities, yet being mindful of where they orient from. And that
right.
combination results in people engaging in their practices more fully because they were really made for them. Rather
right.
than
exactly.
than kind of saying, here's something you should do in a very kind of cookie cutter way.
Right.
That's, you know, in a self-help book about how to make requests.
Right.
So
right.
it really increases the odds and therefore the power and therefore the results usually.
It's an extremely individualized and unique approach, precisely because nobody has the same aqua constellation.
Mm.
Everybody has the same elements. Everybody has quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types, but nobody has the same amount of each and the same emphasis on each. So even though there's a universal language that integral coaching can use, for each client, it's a very, very individualized item. And one of the things that you were mentioning is two major metaphors that the integral coach works with, and both of them based on the client's aqua constellation. One is a metaphor representing their current way of being, and one is a metaphor representing their new way of being, the way they want to be, the way they and the coach decide would be a healthier, more functional way to work. And in each of these cases, in coming up with the metaphor representing the current way of being and the metaphor representing the new way of being, the coach takes into account the aqua constellation of the client. And so the client is looking as or looking through their aqua constellation, whereas the coach is looking at it. And in an objective fashion, they're also trying to get an understanding and be able to look through it as well
exactly
with the client.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's part, that move right there, Ken, is quite significant, actually, because there's that second position that the coach takes, which is actually trying to look through the eyes of the client
right.
and seeing the world as the client sees it, looks at the world, if you
right.
will. That immediately cultivates a profoundly compassionate state in a coach.
Right.
And automatically is cultivating that capacity to appreciate and to be curious and to be affected by that.
Right.
And that move creates a understanding of the client that doesn't come from analysis. It comes from some other felt sense experience that certainly the information was helpful, but there's a relatedness that becomes quite palpable, and it's from that connection that metaphors arise, that something comes up in the form of symbol or language
right. That
has resonance for the client quite often, because the coach is actually connecting quite significantly
right. To
that reality that the client's holding.
Right.
And actually the lenses and learning how to work with the lenses in an aqua constellation in a certain way can sound very analytical, but it's actually getting you to the right territory.
Right.
It's getting you oriented to the territory and the landscape of the client, and then from there you can start really looking at. So it's, and to our knowledge, we don't know of another coaching system that makes that move.
Right.
That rigorously and yet that fully in a kind of non, both cognitive and non-cognitive way.
Right. And it goes with the rather unique comprehensiveness of the AQUIL framework. Even quadrants, once you see them, once you realize first, second, and third person perspectives are always arise together and are irreducible and cannot be reduced to each other and cannot be talked away, wished away. And then you see the different approaches that have taken one of the four quadrants and used it as the only approach. And it becomes really astonishing that this hasn't been sort of spotted earlier. but then, you know, it is rather unique. And you hear, well, I don't know of any other approach that talks about getting in touch with a first person and a second person and a third person approach, but rather the different coaching schools and psychotherapy schools and et cetera select one quadrant as essentially real and reduce everything to that one quadrant.
Yeah.
And therein lies all of the problems.
Yeah. And we've also seen it go the other way, too, where people throw up the four quadrants and, you know, think, okay, we have those three perspectives. So, yeah, there's an I and there's a we and there's an it. And they actually don't get into the kind of all the way down and all the way upness of the rich use of the quadrants, you know,
right. Looking
as and looking at and inside and outside
right. And
orienting quadrants, and then how we translate the other quadrants through an orienting quadrant. Oh, and we have capacities in each of those quadrants. Just that one lens alone just goes way beyond either just somebody using a singular quadrant or saying, oh, yeah, we use the four quadrants, as though it's this, you know, simple, as long as you know these three, I, we, it, you're good.
Yeah, right.
And it doesn't actually get into, yeah, but what's actually going on with the client? You know,
right. Our
use of the quadrant came with Laura and I wrestling with, like, what's actually going on, you know, with clients such that we're seeing this, what we ended up calling orienting quadrants and translations
right. Occurring.
And it was just really carefully listening to, you know, what is going on with them.
Right.
And to even take that one lens and take it down to all the levels and make it useful and be able to, you know, provide it to then our students and coaches as a really useful lens through which to hopefully alleviate suffering in their clients through really effective integral coaching. And then you add, you know, the other five lenses that we use in our
right. Aqual
constellation, levels, lines, states, gender type structure, and Enneagram type structure,
right. Put
those six lenses together, putting them separately because they can't be reduced any one to the other.
Right.
So you can use all the looking as and looking at capacities for all those six lenses, and then you put them up like a constellation and go, ah,
right. Here's
this living, breathing, thinking, feeling human being who I'm
right. Going
to get to support.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, it gets really real, really fast. And some
right. People
say, wow, that seems really complicated. You know, it's just coaching. And, you know, we say, well, you know, human beings are complicated.
Yeah, actually, that's the point. The elements are there.
This is a map that actually reflects accurately this condition. And so isn't it beautiful that we have a map that is so complex and simple, if it's, you know, used with
right. Clarity,
that so beautifully fits in our, at least in our approach now, we're applying it to coaching,
right. But
isn't it amazing that it so beautifully supports the complexity of a human being?